Thank you. We're having a remarkable discussion about one of the most profound cornerstones of our lives, relationships. What else is there between the people we love, the people we like, the people we work for, the people we want to work for? It really is about how we co-mingle with other people around us, some related and some not. So here is a tool, an opportunity, a chance to gather insight about this, which could only make our lives easier. I wonder why more people don't take advantage of this. So this whole show really has been touching upon this idea and other aspects of professional astrology with Mark Lerner. Mark, it really is about relationships, and here's a tool that's available to everybody. Do you ever wonder why more people are not into it? Maybe there's misconceptions about astrology?
I think it's kind of the luck of the draw, because in my own life, I was starting kind of late to go and take some pre-med classes at Columbia University in New York after I'd already graduated from college, rethinking maybe I'd become a doctor. On the very first day of the first series of classes, I was coming back to where I was living in New York City, and I wandered into a bookstore, and I was going through the shelves, and I saw a book called Astrology, the Space Age Science, and I opened it up, and the chapters were remarkable. It was talking about earthquakes caused by elevated positions of the outer planets like Neptune and Uranus in certain places when an earthquake occurred. And then it had a whole chapter about the astronomers, the great physicists and astronomers, people like Copernicus and Kepler and Galileo and even Sir Isaac Newton. They were really astrologers during the time. And what happened, Rob, was that when the biographers would write about these people, for instance, Sir Isaac Newton was the greatest scientist, everybody sort of agrees, before Einstein. And what would happen is they'd say, well, Sir Isaac Newton, with his laws of physics and prisms and light and inventing calculus, had one little problem. He believed in astrology. And then they would basically do that with Galileo and Copernicus and Kepler. And it turns out that it's the same reasoning. It's scientists who will never investigate astrology because they don't think it's real. They think it's pseudoscience. And then all the facts go against them when they actually really start studying it. We have doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and, like myself, sociology people who are all doing astrology because we keep an open mind about it.
Mm. Well, that's really what it's all about. The mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open, and it resonates with some people and it doesn't with others. And it really is something that is there for everybody if they want to take a closer look. And let's hear what some of our callers have to say. East of the Rockies, Terry from Clover, South Carolina. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, Ron. It's a good show tonight. Let me, my question is, with this astrology, how do you go about getting, you know, where the moon and the sun and all that is from you? And how does this also maybe play in or have anything to do with past life regression?
Well, okay, there are a lot of people out there, and I don't know what the qualifications are for somebody to put out a shingle and say, I do past life regression. They probably need to have studied psychology on a very deep level, maybe a clinical psychologist. There may be psychiatrists who are doing it. And then they would wander off into various metaphysical things, and there are a lot of people who do that, and they just become kind of renowned, and I don't send people to do that. But what I would think is there are probably a lot of combinations of astrologers who then work with a psychologist in their community, and they develop a rapport, and let's say the astrologer does somebody's chart, and the person is interested in a past life regression, and then says, go to Dr. So-and-so, and set up an appointment, and then maybe the person goes back and forth and has different visits. But I can't tell you right now who those people are. But you just have to maybe go to places like Google and other areas and put in phrases and say past life regression experts or something like that. And then, of course, make sure that even if the astrologer is in a different state, I mean, you could still do it where you get a professional astrologer to do a really great reading, and then you go maybe in your local area or somewhere not too far away, so you don't have to go on a plane somewhere, and maybe somewhere within your greater vicinity, there's somebody who will do past life regression.
Yeah, once you put your mind to these kind of things. It's you sort of invite it into your life, and next thing you know, it's right in front of you. Let's go to the wild card line. Mark from Fairbanks, Alaska. Welcome to Coast.
Good evening. Good evening, gentlemen. Peace be to this house. I have a question for your guest. I'm a bit of a lunatic and amateur astronomer. I watched the beheading of Orion this past solstice, and I'd like to hear his take on the matter. The last time that happened, I figured about 1632 during the Great Migration from the Old World to the New World. I'll hang up and take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. A beheading of Orion sounds kind of grisly.
Yeah, it sounds grisly to me, and I think only he knows the secret, and maybe he'll have to call back, because I don't, unless there's something about what you and I were just talking about with the Great Pyramid, but he's probably, there must be something that, okay, that Orion is the hunter. I mean, I'm just making a wild guess here.
Yeah.
If he's talking about the beheading of Orion, then it would have to do with the head area. The stars in the head area of Orion were probably maybe an asteroid or some kind of, you know how we have those meteor showers every so often, and they'll
sure.
move through an area. The sky. Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Because he said he's an astronomer.
Well, or maybe was it a partial eclipse?
Well, I don't know if a partial eclipse would do it, although that's a possibility, because if the moon was there in that sector of the sky, but that's the area around Gemini. Okay, so that would not be recent, and I don't know what time period he was talking about.
Right.
So it's either a meteor shower, a comet, or, like you're saying, a moon position or something, and maybe everybody who dabbles in astronomy, and I just have not heard that term.
Hmm. Well, you can always get in touch with Mark Lerner. His website is linked up through coasttocoastam.com. I'm sure he'd be happy to get back to you on that. Let's go to another wild card line. Bill, Bloomington, Illinois. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, great show. I'm just a simple old guy that wants to ask just two simple questions. The first question is, we've heard so much about 2012, and since astrology has been in place since the Caesars and Alexander the Great, and they predicted, you know, how things were going to turn out with those individuals, how do you see 2012? I mean, are we going to be able to watch any more of the Big Ten or no?
Okay, a couple of answers here. I'm moving into an involvement beyond my own website with another group, and it's called Inner Sight, and I'm going to have a lot more to say about the Mayan calendar, particularly on this second website, so just keep that phrase and name, Inner Sight,
okay.
Down the road here, and people can eventually look that up in the next several weeks.
All right.
What I want to say there is just, I've been working with the daily cosmic calendar. I've kind of invented a little thing back 28 years ago, and I analyze what's happening every day in the sky. It's on Yahoo one day at a time, and it's on my website. When people want to look at the near future or what's ahead a month into the future, they can do that through my website. But when you look at December of 2012, and there's some alternate dates in 2012 for the so-called end of the long count of the Mayan calendar that goes over 5,000 years, my belief system, I'll try and sum it up as quickly as I can, is we've had a lot of these things. You know, you go to a bookstore now, Borders, anywhere, and you'll see dozens of books, or at least a couple dozen on the whole thing. And part of it is people cashing in, and part of it people who really want to get into it all and have strong beliefs one way or the other. I do think it's more of a renaissance. I do think we'll all survive it. I'm not going to sit here and say we can't have solar flares and unusual solar activity. We know the sunspots are increasing.
Are there any unusual astrological things happening, like conjunctions and things like that?
There's a special configuration, particularly on December 21, 2012, and this is what I'm going to be articulating.
Aha. Now, what is that for people who might not know what that means?
Well, one of them, there's several things. There's a kind of grouping of the sun with an asteroid called Juno at sunrise. If you were to do a chart, particularly in certain parts of the world, like in the Yucatan and so on. But one of the bigger things is Jupiter and Saturn, the two largest planets, hooking up with Pluto. Somebody called about Pluto before, was asking about that. There's what's called a yod, or a finger of God. It's a triangle kind of formation. It has a fancy name, but it's almost precise, not only on the supposed date of the end of the world and the beginning of a new world. So when we have that winter solstice in 2012, there are very powerful and what I would consider transformative configurations. rather than, oh, this is a death knell or we're not going to survive it. Again, you know, nobody, I think, on planet Earth at this point, unless they have received divine foreknowledge of the event, can say, okay, the sun is going to do such and such, and, you know, it's the end of the world. And, I mean, think this through. The Mayans have a very ancient history themselves. We know that there was a kind of mystery in terms of their disappearance, and we know that they have this 5,000-year kind of long count. Well, was that the only 5,000-year long count they ever had? I mean, they must have had a 5,000-year long count before that and a 5,000-year one before that. And they have even longer cycles that they talk about. So why do we have to assume that just because this 5,000-year cycle, which started around 3,100-something B.C. and is supposed to end on 2012, is the last 5,000-year cycle? I mean, why do we even assume that?
Fascinating. The finger of God. Bill, did you have another question?
Yeah, my second question is, I'm a Capricorn. I was born on the 18th at 9:25 p.m. on a Friday. I've always had a closeness for some reason to the moon. Is that my imagination? I mean, ever since I was a kid, even till now, and I'm 65, I just feel every time the moon is there, I see it. I'm just a closeness to it now. Is this all in my head, or is this something that since I was born, you know, at night, and you kind of like me that the moon would play an important part in your life, basically. How do you see that, perchance?
This could be another whole, literally 3 or 4 hours about the power of the moon and astrology. And years ago, I did the longest, biggest magazine in the 20-year history of when I was publishing Planet Earth. I did I don't know how many pages. It was very big with 32 articles, everything on the moon. I happen to be born myself when the moon is directly overhead. And I'm also a night baby. I was born when the sun was below the horizon, the moon is up. It doesn't matter what sun sign you are. I mean, you mentioned being a Capricorn. You can be any sun sign, born any day of any time. If the moon is rising, if the moon is directly above, let's say you were born right at the new moon, or even in the so-called dark of the moon, when the end of the cycle, or the moon could be with any planet. You could be born with the moon conjunct Mercury, or the moon with Venus, or the moon with Pluto. There are so many strategic ways that the moon would be calling you, empowering you, and since the moon has a lot to do with the subliminal world, it has to do with biological rhythms. Women are very tuned into it, but each man has a feminine side. Every woman has a masculine side. It gets into kind of the Jungian astropsychology of things. But absolutely, it is not an illusion on your part that the moon would be playing a big role. I'm sure it will show up in your birth chart.
Fascinating. Just remember, people, you're not alone. Whenever you think you are, just look out your window. Great questions and tons more right when we come back. Mark, I was just sitting back looking against the wall here in our Los Angeles studio, this poster with the stars, and I couldn't help it. A quick question. What about the first baby born in space? What will that child's chart be like? And can it have a normal chart in astrological terms?
Well, interesting you brought that up. NOVA had a program. It was about last Tuesday or the week before this week. And I just happened to catch most of it. And it was all about sending people to Mars. The more of the sociological and the kind of problems that would about cosmic rays and that can't, the person might start getting cancer, and there was nothing that you could do about it because of how much you'd be out there and you couldn't really protect people. You know, people always think, well, hey, a spacecraft, you can just protect people. The whole idea of a baby born on another planet is interesting. It could be done. I mean, we have a lot of great minds throughout the astrology field, and anyone who would sort of combine astrology, astronomy, and all these programs with mathematics, they would just say, okay, let's say, I mean, it would be harder to say, okay, the baby born between Earth and Moon or between Moon and Mars, but let's say the first baby born on the Moon or the first baby born on Mars, certainly that could be done. The question is whether or not it's hard enough to deal with the health levels of a human being surviving here, and that's with all the critical care, let alone a first baby on Mars or the moon.
Well, say that wasn't an issue. Say they were born on the space station or, say, on the moon. How would that impact their star signs?
For instance, one of the things that people don't realize, and one of my great friends and teachers and colleagues, a fellow named Michael Erlewine, And he's been so active in astrology, brilliant person. He worked with heliocentric astrology in addition to everything he's ever done in astrology, and he's been a great designer of software programs and so many other areas. But back when I was first starting in the mid-70s, he developed an extraordinary array of using the sun as a more soul spiritual type of chart in addition to a birth chart from Earth. So whether it's a baby born in a spacecraft or whatever, the point is we could create a chart and everything would still work. And but the thing is that, you see, everything we do is based on the center of the Earth and a geocentric perspective. So when you Right. say, like, a chart for, let's just say the baby was halfway to the moon, it would take a little bit of doing. And again, the next baby might not be born in that position, so we'd have to create another template with another software program to figure that out. But people could do it.
Fascinating. Well, let's go to the first-time caller line. Vina from San Bernardino, California. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
You know, I know that Zachariah Sitchin has been on the program numerous times, yes?
Yes, God rest his soul, yes.
Yes. I'm curious to know, you know, I know the last caller was also a Capricorn, and, you know, I'm not so much the Bakhtun, Mayan calendar, Y2K, you know, freak as many people are right now. The whole 2012, you know, story or water thing. But I am concerned about, I mean, I know there's a lot going on with the 2012, and there are a lot of cultural, religious coincidences, you know, concerning that. But I'm more concerned with the evidence, you know, past evidence that Zachariah has found. How do you feel about that?
Well, I've not read all those books, although I'm familiar with the storyline in essence, and, you know, I think that he's definitely been onto something. I don't know whether Nibiru and the idea of a planet coming in every 3,600 years, I mean, there's just so many things. There was the whole Emanuel Velikovsky story, which was a big kind of to-do in the scientific field with worlds in collision and planet in upheaval back early 1950s. In fact, there was a whole running battle between Velikovsky and Sagan, and then Einstein and Velikovsky were friends. And now Zechariah Sitchin's work and some of the other people with the Mayan calendar, this is kind of a new round of this kind of looking back at archaeology and ancient cultures and saying, hey, UFOs, there's other planetary energies. I definitely think there's lots of truth to all of these things with the ancient aliens and that we're sort of connected to other planets. So And again, you have the whole thing with the face on Mars.
Well, if Nibiru did exist, how drastically would that change the astrological, you know, charting?
People have surmised that we have a dark star, like a kind of dwarf star. In other words, we think that Alpha Centauri is the closest star. It's actually Alpha Proxima. It's like 3 point something light years. But there may be something to a kind of other star that we don't really see because it's between here and the next star system.
Well, no, just the idea of a planet, of an extra planet coming in every 36,000 years.
What I mean is that you can't just have a planet that far away without some kind of life force, you know, around it is what I'm saying. So maybe there's some kind of other star there. Maybe it's orbiting that, and then it comes in here every so often. Mm-hmm. It would definitely change, you know, history more than astrology. I mean, astrology would change too to some extent. We'd have like another planet that would sort of have to be intermingled, almost like a comet. Like we can put Halley's Comet, and when comets come into this part of the solar system, we can chart that and put that into charts as temporary transits. We'd do the same thing if Nibiru came in, as long as the Earth wasn't knocked off its orbit.
Hmm. Well, there might be the lasting legacy of Zachariah Sitchin. A future of humanity yet untold and yet uncharted. More about this fascinating subject with Mark Lerner right after this. Go to coasttocoastam.com and get caught up on all the good news. We're coming right back at you. Yes, we are back talking about a myriad of subjects. I'm still fascinated by this finger of God that's going to happen on 2012. Saturn and Jupiter and Pluto aligning themselves in some cosmic triangle. Absolutely fascinating. We're getting incredible questions, and we still have a lot more to get to. We're talking with Mark Lerner, who has just been a font of energy and information. We're going to get to all your calls right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking with Mark Lerner about the stars, the universe, and all of its astrological significance. Let's go right back to the phones. Wildcard line, Helen from Brentwood, California. Welcome to Coast.
Hello, gentlemen. I have had a difficult life, and I have a difficult chart, and I wondered how you might handle the aspects that I have. I'm Aquarius. I have five planets in Aquarius and in the eighth house, and I have a T-square, including the first, third, and tenth house. And, you know, I have a transit over one of those aspects, and the whole T-square is activated, and I've got work in all of them.
Well, like happened earlier, somebody had called on the personal level, and whenever I'm on the show, I always tell folks, I'd love to be able to just give a quick kind of analysis, and I can hear in between, you know, as you're saying it, for the rest of the listening audience, when a person has, let's say, a lot of planets in the eighth house in particular, it's one of the 12 components of a birth chart, which can be more difficult than, say, smooth and easy in a lifetime. If you start adding a lot of planets, regardless of what sign it is, and the person has quite a number of planets in that house, then one adds to the challenges and complexities. And if there's another planet here or there that's at a right angle or opposite, then you start adding more of these difficulties. So it's not surprising, Miss, as you're calling in, that you would have had various difficulties throughout your life. The only thing is that as a professional astrologer, I wouldn't be able to just say, because astrologers to me are not psychics. And so what happens is that one has to really sit down, do the chart, you know, study it. This is what I do. And I think most professional astrologers work in the following fashion, where they're going to get the person's birth data rather than do things on the fly, as much as one would love to just reach out and help and, you know, try and give an answer.
Yeah, you have to be thorough about this. Well, Helen, I hope your outlook improves. East of the Rockies, Michael from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome to Coast.
Yes, sir. I'm so glad I got on. I kept trying and trying, and then a persistence really pays off, don't it?
It sure does.
Hey, Mark, how you doing tonight?
Very good.
Good. Got a question. How much do you charge for your services? And number two, my other question is, I've been going through some financial struggles starting like September, October of last year. I was just kind of curious. I think it's going to get better. I can give you a little bit more information. I'm Leo. Came in with Aries rising, born in 1958.
Well, as far as prices, you know, since the website is hooked up on Coast to Coast, I would, you know, there are various things. It depends on how long, you know, and this is true for any astrologer. It usually depends, you know, is it a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour? And again, because people study in advance and depends on how long they've been doing it. But the point is that whether it's me or it's somebody else, depending on what a person needs, even if somebody is, you know, on a financial level, it's difficult. Most astrologers will figure out some way to work with somebody. You know, I was on the show many years ago, and somebody seemed to think that I said, which I didn't, I'll do these free things. And what I was actually doing was saying, I'll help people figure out on the show whether they're a true cusp baby or not, you know, by looking up a couple of examples, like somebody called in and said, I'm born, you know, April 20th, I'm an Aries or Taurus. And because I think I was with George, and George said, well, Mark will freely, you know, sort of help somebody to figure one little thing out. Then there were all these people who emailed me saying, so you're doing readings for free.
Yeah. Now, well, what do your services start at?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, generally, just as an idea, and I've done this for 38 years, I have a session, for instance, that's at about $135 for 45 minutes. And that is actually fairly low. But like in that session, and many other astrologers will have probably similar prices for something like that, but it depends on how long they've studied, and it depends on what we're going to cover. I'm not going to cover everything, like everything about their destiny and natal pattern and all their cycles.
Yeah.
A shorter reading is better for, say, some transits and progressions, let's say the next 6 months, and answering person's questions. And then if you go to an hour and a half, you can start getting into greater detail.
Sure.
But in most cases, just to answer the point, you really need to work with somebody more than once to get into where the astrologer feels, okay, we've really covered a lot, you know, enough that the astrologer feels, okay, that's sufficient, and hopefully study as much as you can. If you want to come back for more sessions, terrific.
Okay. Well, all that information is Mark's website, which is hooked up through coasttocoastam.com. Let's go back to the first-time caller line. Doug from Yardley, Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Welcome to everybody else.
Thanks.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great, thanks. What's your question?
I just don't really question so much as just an overall observation, and I guess feedback is more than a question. Mr. Leonard, I appreciate your daily contributions. I follow them every day and very much look forward to seeing them on a daily basis. You spoke a little bit about Velikovsky and perturbances in the planet, aspects that would throw off the astrological chart. Do you believe that my birthday, as a matter of fact, was January 28th? Do you believe that we have just entered the age of Aquarius upon the recent eclipse on the solstice?
Oh, by the way, happy birthday to you. Caught that. Your birthday is today, or was yesterday, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you're bringing back the whole thing of the age of Aquarius, and this is where we could get into trouble, Rob.
Uh-oh.
Because, see, that's where the whole thing with the linkage between the sidereal and constellational star groups sort of mess up Western astrology, because when we talk about precession of the equinox, we're sort of saying that relative to the beginning of spring, like 2,000 years ago, the sign Aries that we use in the West and the constellation of the apparent star group, they coincided. And like a couple of callers brought up, every 26,000 years, kind of the way the seasons work and the way that the constellational star groups work coincide, but now we've shifted, and every 2,160 years, there's a different group of stars that are kind of behind our springtime. So this fellow is asking tonight, have we entered the Aquarian Age? And here's the problem, and this is like stumped astrologers for a long time. We don't know where a star group exactly starts and ends because they're apparent groupings of stars. You see, this is where the problem is. So
it's
what happens
is... It's a subjective question rather than
objective, like,
yeah.
And my main teacher, Rudyard, said he thought it would be around 2060, which is only 50 years from now, 49 years from now. Now, he wrote that, you know, maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago. And other astrologers say, no, it's much later than that. And others think, for instance, in 1962, there were Indian astrologers said this is the end of the old world and maybe the world is dying because we had seven celestial bodies in Aquarius. And that was even in the sign Aquarius, and there were astrologers in India using our zodiac and saying, hey, this could be the end of the world.
It is a difficult question to answer. Let's go back to the wild card line. Janine from Elk Grove, California. Welcome to Coast
Hi.
To Coast. Hey.
Hi. Hey, I am so glad that I was able to get through. I'm really enjoying this show. My gosh, I really love the way that Mark is delivering his message. It's just wonderful. I have a question regarding the significance of the part of fortune or the pars fortuna. I don't hear anything really definitive or read anything definitive online or in any astrology books as if there's a lot of maybe not a lot of information about it. And I wondered what you had to say about that.
Mark, is that something you're familiar with?
You just touched on, I just love the part of fortune. I just love the part of fortune. The part of fortune is one of the great underestimated things in a chart. It's the only holdover from Arabic astrology. I mean, there are other parts. There's a part of life, part of death, part of marriage, part of children. There are dozens and dozens of parts. And it was brought in by Arab astrologers 1,000 years ago when they kind of overran Spain and they moved into, you know, parts of Europe and so on, and they brought their astrology with them. And it was kind of like almost like a East and West instead of the horrible problems we have now with Islam and Christianity, there was all this educational growth of what, Rob, you're talking about, of all these people who have been watching the stars, and suddenly there was a merger. Now, here's the deal. What the part of fortune is, and make it really succinct,
okay,
is you add the moon and the rising sign together, and you're basically you're subtracting the sun. The part of fortune is almost like an extra power to the moon, and it goes around the chart, goes from the first house through the 12th house, from the new, when you start the new moon, you go through the first quarter moon, the full moon, and so on. The part of fortune moves throughout a person's house system, and it emphasizes, in other words, if you're born at a first quarter moon, everybody born in a first quarter moon will have the part of fortune in the fourth house, which rules home, family, roots, and foundations. If you're born at a full moon, the part of fortune is going to be in the seventh house of partnership, love, and relationship. If you're born at a last quarter moon, the part of fortune will be in the career house, which is profession, career, and achievement. And then there are other areas, and then you can study what sign is it in. Is it conjunct or united with the planet? And it's a whole marvelous little thing about happiness and fulfillment. It's a real subtle thing, but it actually works in a chart.
I like that. So you can go back to find out where the moon was when you were born and get a quick little snapshot of.
Yeah, and it's an empowerment of the moon. Like, just like the eastern horizon, when the sun rises, the sun is very connected to the so-called rising sign. And the part of fortune is really the moon's ascendant or the moon's rising point. So the part of fortune is very connected to emotion, moods, feelings, sensitive rhythms, particularly for women, but also for men, too. Anybody can use it.
Great question. I'm learning a lot. West of the Rockies, Darcy, Phoenix, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really kind of, okay. I know you don't want to get into this, all this about 2012, but my birthday's on December 21st of 49, and you said something about if you're born on a date that's an important date of something else, how that would affect you or something like that. Am I confused?
So you're wondering about your own birthday and if it has a deeper meaning because it's on the 21st?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, let me give you something exciting. Most women and men don't want to push themselves 8 years further in the future than 2012. However, exactly 8 years to the day on 2020, okay, 8 years after the winter solstice of when everybody is wondering if the world is going to end, we go 8 years later to the day. Good old Jupiter and Saturn, which are in that finger of God, Rob, with Pluto,
yeah,
they're going to be in an exact conjunction at zero of Aquarius, and a lot of people feel that is actually the birthing point for the age of Aquarius, because what will happen in 2020 at the winter solstice on this woman's birthday is we start what is called a mutation of Jupiter and Saturn, where every 20 years thereafter, they'll be in the air signs. We have this thing about like every 140 to 160 years, the largest two planets, Jupiter and Saturn, they energize a certain element, air, earth, fire, water, and they do this over about an 800-year time period. And it has a lot to do with nations and vast forces that are sort of beyond the individual force. But maybe this woman, 8 years later, is going to have many revelations beyond the Mayan calendar.
I love it. I absolutely am looking forward to this age of Aquarius that is soon be upon us. Wildcard line. Mike, Riverside, California. Welcome to Coast.
Hi, gentlemen. How's it going tonight?
Great, thanks. What can we do for you?
All right. I'm going to try not to blow your mind with this one. I just learned this. I was interested by your program, so I downloaded an app for my iPod, and it turns out that my cousin was born on the 5th of January, which was the day before a full moon, and I was born exactly one human gestation period later on September 28th, 1985, which is a full moon at 4:20 a.m.
So you're born nine plus months apart, both at the full moon?
Yep.
Okay, and how did that happen? What was that connected to, an app?
It was an application that shows all the calendar dates of the new moons and full moons. Well, so I just looked back, and my cousin was born before a full moon, and I was born exactly 9 months later, human gestation period, on a full moon.
Well, by the way, we we might have been talking about Venus. I don't know if we'll get to it. But aside from the lunar kind of pregnancy cycle, because the pregnancy cycle is very connected to kind of lunar months of 28 days apiece, the planet Venus has a 9.5-month cycle where it's a morning star and evening star. I work with a lot in terms of whether the stock market, like the Dow Jones, is bullish. Like, we're right now in a bullish cycle of 9-plus months. And before, like, if you go back to last year, from January to late October, we were in a more bearish cycle. This has, it's a general indicator. It's not an exact thing. You have to check Mercury. You have to check, say, the New York Stock Exchange and other things. But Venus is a wonderful planet. It's been used a lot with the Mayans. And yet, in terms of love and business and real estate and creative artistry, women out there particularly need to watch Venus. But even what this fellow is talking about, maybe there's a connection in the charts between their Venus cycles as well as the full moon.
Melissa from Winnemucca, Nevada. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. The gentleman touched on a few subjects earlier, much earlier in the show, about the void moon. And I've heard little bits here and there about it, but I don't really know what its influence is, and just kind of curious to get an insider's perspective on that. And I was also curious about the things that he mentioned just briefly about the 2013, 14, 15, something related to the 1960s, that sort of thing.
Well, the void moon is a very complex subject, but fundamentally every two and a half days the moon goes through a sign, and when it nears the end of a sign and it's made all the alignments it can make, because the moon is the fastest moving body, it sort of finishes or has a period that could be a few minutes, it could be a few hours, sometimes it's even more than a day, where it's not making any more alignments. It's not trining anything or squaring or opposing all the fundamental aspects. And then it's in this kind of void mode where it's best to finish old things, and maybe this is at least the general thing. You don't want to go overboard and push too hard, and then the moon will finally enter a new sign. But there are more complexities, and not everybody agrees with how it works. But it's a big thing. It's been going on for centuries, and it's another one of those Mercury retrograde things. As far as the 2013, 2015, when we get outer planets like Uranus and Pluto, and they're going to be in a square pattern, they're going to be creating a mirror effect of what happened in the Great Depression, unfortunately. Hopefully we won't have a repeat of that, but we do know we're in some serious trouble in America and around the world economically. And so these two planets, they were at right angles in the early 1930s, and now they're going to be at right angles at least six times from 2013 to 2015. And it greatly affects America's birth chart, but it also affects the whole world economy and the geopolitical situation, because outer planets are hard to control. They sort of control us. It's like circumstances beyond our control are in the driver's seat instead of human beings.
So what is the next big astrological event that we should look for as far as great changes coming, either politically or, you know, with the Earth changes, perhaps?
We have the third of three Jupiter-Saturn oppositions. That happens March 28th. And it happens right when America's having another one of our exact Saturn returns. So around March 28th, we got the biggest planets pulling on opposite sides of the Earth. It could have to do with some actual tidal kinds of things and kind of storminess, at least in the psychic atmosphere among certain nations. The other big thing is Uranus, the first of the outer planets, which is a planet of revolution, just like we're seeing with the young people, on March 11th, oddly enough, the 11th day of March of the year 2011, Uranus enters Aries.
Okay, we're just about out of time.
Right. And it rules the 11th sign of Aquarius. So that watch March 11th, watch March 28th.
You got it. Mark Lerner, thank you so much. It's been a great few hours. Stay tuned. Open lines next hour.